Bill Russell joins us on Sports Byline USA, the Hall of Fame Boston Celtics center. And, of course, he was declared the greatest player in the history of the NBA by the Professional Basketball Writers Association of America back in 1980. Five times the MVP of the NBA, played 13 seasons in the NBA, all of those with the Celtics, where he averaged 15 points, 4.3 assists, and 22.5 rebounds for his entire career. I've known Bill for many years because one of my stops in my career was up in Seattle, where Bill, of course, was the coach of the Seattle Supersonics. And as I was doing the games up there, I got to know Bill. But as much as I cherished what he was able to do in sports, what I enjoyed was the long conversations that we would have about life. And those are the things that stayed with me. And so with Bill in here tonight, it's something special. Bill, good evening to you.
Well, I'd like to say it's good to see you, Ron, but...
Here we go.
I'm not going to lie to you.
I knew I was in trouble. Oh, golly. I've told stories over the years of you coming over to me at the broadcast position during games and things you'd say to me. One particular moment was when you were playing in Boston with the Sonics, and you were so angry with your team in the second half because they weren't playing particularly well, and you came over and you said something to me, and I thought to myself, why is he telling me this? Why isn't he over there chewing out his team? So how are you doing? I mean, basketball has been such a big part of your life all your life. Was it hard to escape the fact that it was Bill Russell, basketball player, not Bill Russell, the person?
I never really considered that. My mother and father were so supportive. Like I always say, my first memory of life, the first thing I can remember, was that my mother and father loved me. And I carried that, you know, that's a heck of a start in life, is that, you know, like when I was about three or four, the first time my mother let me go out and play out front, used to have to play in the back, she said, now you go out there and you play and have fun. People may come by. And they may say something to you. Don't pay any attention to it because it has nothing to do with you. And because if people say something to you, whether they like you or dislike you, without knowing you, it has nothing to do with you. And so I pretty much live my life that way in that I go and I do what I try to do and try not to bother anybody. And... just live my life. And so it's mostly irrelevant what other people think.
Yeah, I mean,
that don't know me.
That's where the seeds came from for your self-esteem, I assume, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you grew up at a time where we didn't have a lot of tolerance in this country. Yes, you grew up in the Bay Area in California, which was certainly different. But and you were also not only a black man, but you were also growing into being a very tall black man. So you were conspicuous by size and by just looks.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed every inch and every minute of it.
Where did basketball come into your life?
Well, I'd never seen a basketball until I was nine. When my folks moved to Oakland, in Louisiana, I'd never seen a basketball. And then when I got to Oakland, we moved into the projects, and some of the kids that came up with a basketball backboard and rim and nailed it to a tree. And it was a cement square there. And so that was our basketball court. And so I started playing. And I always had fun, but I wasn't very good at it. But for me, it was playing. And playing is just playing, you know. There's no ulterior motive saying that I'm going to do this, just playing. And used to go out every day after school and in the summertime and just play.
When did you begin to blossom and really appreciate and enjoy the game of basketball?
Well, I always enjoyed it. I didn't become a good player until I was out of high school. I was a...
You won three championships at McClyman's.
Right. But two of the championships, I didn't play a minute. In my sophomore year, I was third string junior varsity, And I think I got into the 3 or 4 games. And my junior year, I went out to junior varsity again, and I got cut the second day. But the varsity coach invited me to come and play on the varsity. And so I spent the season sitting on the bench. And my senior year, I played half a year. I was a starter. And that was when I was starting to play. And then between February and September, I learned how to play. Things started to fall into place, and I could play then.
You went over to USF, and you say in your new book about the Jesuits taught you something. They taught you the difference between truth and lies, almost, in a sense. That experience over at USF, because you won 2 national championships there as well.
Yes. Well, first of all, I'll just say this. I think the Jesuits are the prime educators on the planet. Because their premise is, we trust our students with knowledge. And so they don't try to hide anything from you. And they feel if you're enlightened, you become a better person, and you have a better understanding of life and everything. So, but we were, the Jesuits at that time at USF didn't have a real, they didn't place a real importance on athletics.
Now that's an understatement.
and so we were playing almost in a vacuum. It's like, it's nice to have a good basketball team. It's okay. But we're not going to do anything to encourage or discourage it. And so my freshman year, I had a scholarship. And they said, if you make the varsity next year, your scholarship changes. Well, they decided not to change it. And I got a little upset. So I was going to leave. But the reason I was going to leave was that basically what had happened, we had made a contract. We had made a deal. If you do this, you know, get your grades and et cetera, and make the team, this is what you get. And then they decided to change that. Well, then I considered a broken contract. You know, it's so funny. I don't think they had any malice whatsoever. I don't think there was any ill feelings or anything. They just decided that for economic reasons, we're not going to do this. And I also decided for economic reasons that if that's the case, then I'll have to go elsewhere. But they changed it. So my sophomore year, I was on an academic scholarship. And I wasn't really academic.
You were always, and I've known you to be this way, you've always been a very highly principled man. You've got a Don Quixote-ish about you in that you stand up for things. I'll tell this story, and I don't know if you remember it or not. But you and I were in Boston, and we were having dinner in the team hotel, and I believe it was Mayor White, but don't hold me to that. But whoever was running for office in the mayor, for the mayor's office in Boston, came into the restaurant where we were in the hotel, came over to you to say hello, and there were photographers with him, and started taking pictures. And you got upset, and the reason why you got upset was because, as you told me later, you said, I don't want to look like I'm endorsing this person who's running for office. I mean, you always had a sense about you, Bill, about what was right or wrong. And I'm just wondering what the seeds were of that. Where did that come from?
Well, basically, my grandfather and my father. My father was always my number one hero. And his father was his hero. And my grandfather used to say that every person has a line inside them that no one is allowed to cross. Then you invading their personage. And my father the same way. So my attitude toward the society I live in is that I try my best never to bother anybody. You and I could come into this studio for the next 10 years, and unless you provoked me, I would never say anything unkind to you or rude to you. But conversely, I would never permit you to say anything unkind to me are rude to me.
Bill, how did you actually see basketball in your life beyond college? I don't think that you ever saw it as just a way out of the projects, but as just another part of your life. Am I correct in assuming that?
Well, one of the things I said in the book is Havlicek and I were at an airport. I forget what city. And we were standing there talking, waiting. You know, we should spend a lot of time at airports, as you know. And this guy walked to me and says, "You're a basketball player?" And I said, "No." And Havlicek, after he left, Havlicek said, "Why do you always say no? I've noticed that you always say no when people ask you a basketball player." I said, "John, that's what I do. That's not what I am. That's my work. And I do that the very best I can." Because my father, when I was young, told me that if you take a job, do it as best you can so that you can create integrity. He used to say, we're here in Louisiana, and he says, if you decide to be a ditch digger, which is a lowly profession, doesn't take much to do that. Here in Louisiana, you're digging ditches. I want people in Mississippi, Alabama, all the way to Florida, Texas, and Arkansas. I want them to say, there's this guy down in Monroe that's digging ditches. You've got to go see these ditches that he digs because they are a work of art. And he said, that's the way you should approach whatever you choose to do.
Bill, hold on just a second. Bill Russell, Hall of Famer, has joined us and you here on Sports Byline. We'll continue talking about his career, but we'll take a quick break on Sports Byline.